This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
The Score Midday Show.
Make it sexy.
Did you ever think about putting a little accent on it, make it Mark Grote?
Oh my God. See, now you don't even know what you just did, Marshall. So back in the day when Shaquille O'Neal was a member of the Miami Heat, I was covering a Bulls playoff series in which Shaq was part of the Heat. I see Shaquille O'Neal, and he's there and just a couple reporters. He looks at my credential. He's like,
"Who's that, Mark Grote? Is that your name, Mark Grote?"
I said, "Actually, it's Grote." He goes, "No, I like Grote. Grote's better."
Not him strong-arming you into changing your name.
But what if the heart doesn't mean anything? What if she writes it on all the cups?
Mine says Ted, no heart.
Mine says Swarly.
I think it's Swarly from Barney. It's not even a name. Who would ever be called Swarly? Oh, please don't start calling me Swarly.
If it's not about winning, quite honestly, I don't really care about it.
Jalen Johnson's allowed to be a little bit jaded. I call him Jalen Johnson, but that's just me. I think that Jalen Johnson jaded. That is what we're looking at here with Jalen Johnson.
As he gets yolder, I think that's a good idea.
Wow. So
we
need to stop this right now, and I'm sorry
that's
I started
probably.
It.
Veronica and I are trying this new fad called jogging. I believe it's jogging or yogging. It might be a soft J.
This isn't good. Elise Miniker just posted, Justin Steele is headed to the 15-day injured list with left elbow tendonitis.
Justin.
Enough, okay? This is inappropriate and it stops right now.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Actually, it resumes right now. Mark Grote in on this Thursday as we broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. The text line is back up, 312-644-6767. We love to see it, or do we? Keep it clean, fam. Keep it clean. And also, the texter's asking a question today that we want to talk to you about, so... Nicely done. Way to think that through, everybody. Additionally, on our ones and twos, Adam Studzinski, Ray Diaz producing, Brandon Fryer here as well. You can check us out on Twitch. 670 The Score is our Twitch, Chicago 670 The Score. And that is where we find Matt Anaya, Jenna Duddleston, and Connor O'Donnell. And you can also try our 670 Facebook page. I think that place is very hostile. It would be nice to have some fun, people. So join us there. We mentioned it. Adam Rittenberg joins us at 11:25. Herb Howard and Matt Bowen. And now we join you, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, the Midday Show on The Score. And we got to have some fun last night going to the Bulls game. You, me, and Ray, Marshall.
Yes, we had an excellent time because the Bulls play an entertaining brand of basketball. They're going to score a lot of points. They're probably also going to give up a lot of points, but that's okay because as of late, usually they come out on top and get the dub. That was the case last night. It was an important game. That pretty much cements the fact that they will be the 9 seed in the upcoming play-in tournament, which means they will host the Heat as opposed to having to travel to Miami. And they have a season sweep over the Heat. So all things are looking like the Bulls are going to play a couple of games for a chance to get into the playoffs and earn a spot opposite this team with the second best record in the NBA, the best record in the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who they have not come close to beating all season long.
So we had hyped this game up as the game of the year. We were pretty excited because when the Bulls have made the play-in every year of its existence, and we know that they're probably not going to take down a team like the Cavaliers, who they sat Coby White against earlier in the week, and who they've given up point totals that reach in the 130s and the 140s. Cavs are tearing down the Eastern Conference at will. You know what your situation is. Fair to Midland, as I used to say. Because they're in the middle of the Eastern Conference.
That's a very Midwestern thing to say, by the way. Fair to Midland.
Is it?
It's also
a very Texas thing to say.
Oh, is it?
Dare I say it is very American to say. Perhaps we all say it.
All right.
But the point is, we knew that this was the game of the year because when you're talking about a play-in situation and play-in seeding, this is what's on the line. Trying to figure out where you're going to be in the lower regions of that playoff or postseason appearance, right? Yeah. Taking on the Heat, a team they know well, especially in these situations. We wanted to see what would happen, so we figured, let's go to the actual game.
What I loved about the game last night, there were obviously big shots, but there were so many opportunities or moments where I thought Miami could get back in the game. But to the Bulls' credit, they hit just enough big shots to keep that lead big enough and make you feel comfortable. I know we were talking about this, but Coby White finally late in the game hit a couple of shots. Obviously, the Modest Bouzelis shot at the end was awesome. I don't know if you guys caught this being at the game. I'd love to know the reaction to the shot of Bouzelis when he drained it. But Bouzelis, after he hit that, man, like, because they had the TV close up on him, badassery. Like, he, for the first time watching Modest Bouzelis, and we're all excited about Modest Bouzelis, I got goosebumps because it was like this look, that look in the eyes of bleep you, bleep, like beyond, oh my God, I'm so excited I made that shot. F you is what Modest Bouzelis was saying. Like, if you go back and look, I don't know if you guys saw it, but you close up is Modest, and it's weird because he's so young and baby face, but he had that look of, I am a killer and I will kill you.
I think the greatest thing about being at the game is you don't have to worry about, is the camera going to show what you want to see? You can just look and see for yourself. And yes, we all saw it because we saw the ball go through the net. Uh-huh. We all looked at Modest's reaction, and then we all immediately elevated out of our seats and walked out of the building because he said, that's a ball game.
Hold on. Point of order here. How tall are you,
Marshall? That's a great moment to leave, by
the
way.
How tall are you?
I'm only 6'2".
Only 6'2"?
I'm 5'3", and all I could see were hands in front of me raised in the air along with my own. So I could not see the stank face, the Russ Westbrook snarl on Modest Bouzelis' face.
Is this like
I could only see arms in front of me, and I was standing. So, like, we could not all see it.
Is this like when you're on a ride at the theme park, but you're not on the front row, so you definitely don't know what's coming because all the hands are up in front of you?
Yes. Roller coasters are extra exciting for me, just like basketball games, because I can't see.
You're the Wolf. Sorry. You're Tracy Wolfson. I am always so worried about Tracy Wolfson, one of the great sideline reporters in this business, one of the great broadcasts. She always is getting swallowed up by people. I was out
arms
on the field.
Straight up with the microphone.
Oh,
trust,
like,
that wingspan.
There were times when she would do Bears games, and I remember, I think it was, man, there was a Denver game where the Bears hit a game-winning field goal, and the Wolf was, I call her the Wolf. The Wolf is out there, and she's getting swallowed up, and I'm trying to push people away and stuff, but I'm always worried about her because of the short factor.
Wait, so. Ray, did you see it? Were you able to take it?
I had the same problem as Layla. I'm not sure.
Okay, I feel bad now.
Marshall's like, I can always see everything. But it's, Ray and I were like, not
and
so
it was
fast.
That crew in front of us. They were rowdy. Everybody was rowdy
time. The crew in front of us was awesome. And that dude had a Spurs hat on. And he was still enjoying the game. Spurs fans are everywhere.
The guy with the Spurs hat, by the way, is the guy that was spilling his beer when he was all over the place, Marshall.
The guys next to us were also spilling beers. And he was manspreading into my seat.
Manspreading?
Dude, it was so so bad. And
what's man spreading?
Where you're man and you take up space. Like I never get my seat worth on a plane because the guy next to me will just overlap into my seat because I'm sure.
I want a logical complaint.
There are guys who will sit with their foot underneath the seat in front of me, and I'm like, bro, what are you doing?
But like, you never had somebody pick their foot up, right? Like a barefoot. You've never.
Do you know what happens when I do that? If you're going to do that, I just go club rules and I throw the elbow. Bang. Or I accidentally like drip some like soda on it.
Well, look, my issue
no,
with
they,
all
don't
the,
start no stuff won't be no stuff.
All the drinks that were
see
being
something, say something.
Spilled. I took my biggest takeaway last night is a suggestion I would like to lodge with the United Center. I don't know how much it's going to cost. But can you put some cup holders on the back of the seats?
Dude.
What are we doing?
Seriously.
They don't have enough room, I don't think.
I mean, they must have just missed that because the United Center is a beautiful building. It really is. But that is the one thing.
That's
that
why
is
things
the
were getting
thing.
Spilled left and right because everybody's holding their drinks in their laps.
Oh, yeah. No, I went to a concert. I went to see Deftones a couple of weeks ago at the United Center. These are people who are out double-fisting with their beers. They got nowhere to put them.
And that's go it. Like, I don't. People with their bare feet up on planes, like I don't know what you're thinking.
Feet like, up?
That's
they're
what I was talking about.
Sure.
Like if I had that happen next to me and I had a soda, I'd just be like one drop. Like, hey, move it. But
it's
when
bad.
It, when it comes to that's just
disgusting.
Who puts their feet up?
People without home training.
When you say put their feet up, do you mean like actually
bare feet up?
Like they kick
on
their feet up, like
your,
you know, you can kick up a foot
on the
window,
the
like if you're on a window seat.
Oh,
right?
Oh, I see what you're
and
saying.
And you can just kick your feet up,
oh,
and now
God.
You've got a bare foot sneaking
and
through
I'm not the person,
row in front of you.
Like I understand, like if I'm sitting in front of a kid, that kid's gonna kick my seat. Like that's just life. You're sharing,
right?
But
right.
when it comes to that crossing of a line, yeah, I wonder. I think I would probably be inclined to like maybe
you quit your man spreading now. That's what you need to say.
No, I mean, the guy who had he voluntarily sat in a middle seat between two people as a Southwest flight, and there were multiple window and aisle seats, sat in the middle of us, and then put his feet underneath my seat. Like, what
oh,
are
that
you
can't do that.
What are you doing?
I would kick someone's foot if it was underneath. Like, that is my designated space for my feet. I would kick someone's foot.
Also, I paid for that seat. Just because I'm short doesn't mean you get to take up my space. But that was happening to me yesterday.
I'm sorry to hear it.
The guys, at one point the guy's knee was halfway between my, like, it split half of my seat. You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody sits like that on the diagonal,
yeah.
And like, I'm like touching him next to him. But you know what I'm not doing? Because I don't know this man and he's that close to me and he's in my space. I'm not going to further that by sharing a hot dog with the individual at the same time.
That's something we'll address a little later in the show.
Little hot dog.
If you, look, what you want to do with your hot dog is your business.
You
but
wonder
just understand
how we get
if you
into
do
pandemics.
It on the front row of a game, then that's something that's going to be talked about on this show and on other platforms as well. I do want to get back to the game.
Yeah,
at
I'm
hand,
sorry
though.
About that. We had
no,
a great time.
It's my fault. I brought up the bare feet. That's on me. I'll take Bears. Responsibility. I'll point the finger. It's a thumb.
If you have
right
bare
back at me.
Feet and you do that and you take your shoes off on a plane and they're bare and
everybody
you put them
hates
in people's spaces, stop listening to our show. I will find you and I will scowl at you.
I will find ye.
And understand
and
that everyone
you.
Hates you. So what I hated about last night was the terribly slow start the Bulls got off to, and one player in particular got off to a very slow start. Let's say at the end of the third quarter, I told you a player was one for eight from the field, 0-for-3 from three, did get to the free throw line four times, but had 6 points, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, and he was the reigning conference player of the month.
How you doing, Coby White?
Yeah.
We then asked the question because here he is with another slow start, and this is after he had a slow start against Charlotte, but he ends up with 37 in that game.
Okay, so is
and
this...
Then did they need to sit him against Cleveland?
Is this the essence of Coby White? Like, because I am confounded, man, by Coby White. Is Coby White a star or is he a good NBA player? Because we do this thing. Last year, he had that crazy, torrid, awesome, like, pace and greatness. And then it kind of faded off a little bit and regulated. And I don't know. We're seeing that to some degree this year as well. So I think that is symbolic. Him going away for three quarters of Like, who is this guy? Like, who is he really? Marshall, is Coby White a star someday? Or is he, we should just appreciate him for what he is. And that's a good player who gets really hot and can carry you for chunks of a season, but don't count on it for 82 games.
I think that's tentative.
The best thing about Coby White is that he has not hit his ceiling yet. And we don't know how good he can be now. I want to be very clear. This game was very different from that game that he played in Charlotte in a couple of ways. In Charlotte, it was more he was deferring, right? He wasn't doing, like in this game, he was 1-for-8. In Charlotte, he just took one shot until the last minute of the first quarter, and he was actually 1-for-2 from the field after the first quarter. Then in the second quarter, he was 5-of-6. Then in the third quarter, he was 3-of-5. He was building and building and building. In this game, he got through three quarters of play, and it hit one shot in 8 attempts.
I think the problem is with the Heat, you're trying to play their game. That's what they're good at. They're good at their pace and their spacing is so good. And the way that they defensively close out, it's a partial zone sometimes. It may be an actual zone. They're so good at making you play their game. They're going to force a good perimeter team to start to go into the lane. And some of the shots the Bulls even had in the lane, you're missing bunnies, you're missing easy shots where you can finish. So I think the shot selection was a little bit more poor. I feel like there were some halftime adjustments that were made to get the Bulls back into this game, but the whole team was not shooting well when it came to the start of it. But that's what Miami does to their opponents.
It's nice watching the Bulls play Miami without Jimmy Butler, I will say that. Like, it's such an X factor.
That's one of the things. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. Once again, coming up big when Coby White wasn't hitting, Josh Giddey, like, Josh Giddey has shown us now that what we're seeing isn't just, oh, he's just playing well for a stretch of games. He's pretty much a near or actual triple-double any given night. And he's not that, you know, 12 points, 10 assists, 10 rebound triple-double. He's putting up big numbers. Last night, perfect example, 28 points, 16 rebounds, 11 assists. And there were a couple of times where he should have had assists, but his teammates, as Layla just mentioned, didn't finish, didn't hit the bunnies.
He had, there was one assist, I don't know if you guys will remember this, or not, maybe you were talking to Herb Howard at the time. but
shout out Herb Howard, we saw him by the Little Goat Taqueria stand, and the tacos were fabulous.
Looking forward to talking to Herb. What, when's Herb? Noon?
Noon.
Is that Herb?
High
Herb
noon.
Howard?
We're talking high noon? And, no, high noon
I
is,
mean, not high noon, but
what are you
high
doing?
Noon. He's at noon, which
stop
is high
scrambling
noon.
The eggs.
But high noon is right before high noon, because that's just how it works out.
Josh Giddey had a play where it looked like he was going to drive right down the middle. Takes about two dribbles, like he's going to the basket, and then almost it felt inconvenient, throws it back to Vooch at the top of the key.
There was a lot of panic extra passing. Yes.
But that was beautiful. I was like, what are you doing? And he then he passes it back to Buz. I thought it was, or to Vucevic. I thought it was excessive, but it worked.
Well, that's the Billy Donovan offense, when you think somebody's got a shot, there's an extra pass in there that usually finds a better open look. But that was a hard-fought game against the Heat. You know, Heat came out early, they established well, and we got to enjoy just hanging out at the Bulls game and having a great time with fans. Despite the man spreading, it was still an awesome, awesome time.
I do appreciate them spreading the love. Kind of going under the radar and has since the trade deadline, Nikola Vucevic, 20 points, 11 rebounds, 8 quiet assists. They had
always
33 as a team.
Vooch has had a good season.
His numbers are always quiet. I mean, that's a great word to describe it. Every time, like, we're so enamored by what Josh Giddey is doing, 7th triple-double. Vooch just does his thing every night.
No, absolutely. And you could have argued that he should have been on the All-Star team because of it. He had a great season. So we still like Vooch. That's the bottom line here. Vooch has made us happy.
He won't be back.
We do want to.
What?
Well, we don't. He's got another year on his contract, so let's talk about the future.
Where'd you
of the
guys
Bulls.
Sit, by the way? Did you guys have good seats? Or
We're 10 rows
we
back.
Had great seats.
Oh,
yeah.
Sick. Nice.
Yeah, thanks to Bonnie.
The hookup here?
Yeah.
Oh, Bonnie's
Bonnie
the
hooked
best.
It up.
Bonnie's
a good one. Also, a VIP experience with the pregame picture together as a group.
Aww. And we took a pic with the Northwestern lacrosse team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, shout out to the champs.
Were they singing the 7th inning stretch? What was going on? What
no,
was
but we were like, oh my gosh, we're in the presence of a winning dynasty. So we kept telling them how awesome they were.
Oh, that's cool.
Because they are.
That's
so
awesome.
Northwestern lacrosse team, we salute you because you guys are fabulous. We have a lot more actually talking about the Bulls coming up next. The future was brought up by one Mars Hall Harris. Hall.
Yes, all the halls.
This is Hall.
But point being, we want to know what we're looking at, not just for this play-in, but forward. So we'll talk about that next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
114-109, Bulls with 52 seconds to go. Bill, how do you play this now? Do you play it out? Do you foul? What do you do?
Well, they're going to play it out right now, but they're running out of possessions. Miami
Hero with the strip and a steal with a pull-up topside three. No. Rebound, Herter. Oh, my. Herter races over the timeline. Herter in the paint. In the right corner, a three by Mattis. Yes! Onions, baby onions, timeout, Miami. Mattis Vasilis, the rookie with big time onions. You gotta love him.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
You know that was Chuck and Bill on the call right here on 670 The Score. Big day for The Score. Cubs, Bulls, same day. You got to love April and October because it's like that. This is the Midday Show. Mark Grodian, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi. As we continue to talk about the Bulls, they win over the Heat 119-111 yesterday. And Kevin Herter, by the way, Mr. Basketball New York. Did you know that? A former Mr. Basketball New York.
That plays. That plays. He's a basketball player. He can hit shots. He can get things done. At the NBA level, some teams have made him into more of a spacer, a three-point shooter only. But we're seeing, as he's not been limited to that role in Chicago, he's got other tools in his kit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here I was questioning his three-point shooting when he first got to the team, and then he made me not question very quickly in the game, actually, that I was watching, and then has continued to be that person since. Just good facilitating out of him as well, good shot selection, I feel like, at times on the floor. So Kevin Herter, a big part of the reason the Bulls were able to pull off that win over the Heat. And I think further try to figure out their seeding in this play-in tournament, one that they have made every year. since it has existed in the NBA.
Well, no, they made the playoffs outright 1 year.
But that play-in didn't exist that year.
That was the Milwaukee series, which turned out to be a disaster.
No, it existed? What do you mean?
Well, yeah, but the Bulls have either made the play-in or the playoffs. Oh, yeah.
Three years ago, they played Milwaukee in a best of seven. Yeah. Last 2 years have been...
They skipped the play-in portion of the tournament, which is good for them because we know what happens when they play in the play-in. They just win one or win none and go home.
Right.
And that's all she wrote.
By the way, are we gonna all go out for the play-in games? I think we should.
I mean, they're gonna be playing Ramirez. At home.
Yeah.
Well,
you guys might be going to the game.
It depends on how the seating shakes out.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But I'm pretty confident now that they're going to end up as the 9 seed hosting the Heat because now they have the game separation. All they need is one win against either the Wizards at home or the Sixers on the road. And they are clinching. They clinch that 9 spot to get to the 8 spot. They would need Atlanta to lose 2 out of 3 games, and they win both their games. And I don't really see that happening.
They were officially eliminated out of 7 seed contention, which we knew was a long shot.
Yeah.
So now it's trying to figure out how they fit in into that mix.
They would have needed to, try against the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was not on the Billy Donovan menu. Which is, I still take very much an approach of you were wrong for that because you can't send the message we're trying to do as well as we can do and then go out and just say here you can have a win, because especially based on what we saw last night with Coby White looking like he was a little, I don't know if it was rust, it can't be rust, it's only been like 3 days, but you wonder if the hot streak would have continued against a Cavaliers team without Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, that's what we were asking, was do you take out the hot hand when he was playing with that, at least I would say points momentum. He was, like we said, started out slow on Sunday, sits, and then you see a little bit of rust ultimately in the game. But there was also a lot that factored into that. I feel like Heat were aggressive. Bulls committed turnovers. The Heat were really good spacing wise early. The rebounds were squarely in favor of Miami to start the game. It was just it was different spacing, and I feel like that really helped Miami to begin with.
Texter wants to know from you guys, why did Tyler Hero pass up a layup?
Because in Tyler Hero's eyes, as a professional basketball player, an all-star, by the way, an open three is the same as a layup in his eyes, but it's worth 1.5 times the points of a layup. Yeah.
We have to ask Herb Howard about this because he went off. We saw him at the game, and then that happened, and I'm like, oh, we just talked to him about
that's
this.
Wild. I didn't know Herb was going on whatever he is, 30 going on 90. I didn't realize that.
No. I think he has a good point to be made. He specifically said, I'm tired of 3-on-1 breaks where you don't score because the two guys that you're running with both go out to the 3-point line as opposed to one of them, maybe one of them going out there, but the other one going just traditional 2-on-1 break for a layup.
I actually think that running after a turnover on your fast break and having nobody in front of you and then pulling up for a missed three is worse than if you had missed a dunk.
It's a pickup move.
I actually think it's worse than if you just run as fast as you could and try to run down the court and miss the dunk.
I love that idea. What is worse in basketball, an air ball or a missed dunk?
There were some bad air balls in that game, too, yesterday. We did see
Kobe had an air ball.
Poor Patrick Williams hit the back of the backboard at one point. And then the arena was collectively like, oh.
He had a bad angle, and the shot clock was winding down, so he had to, throw it
I
up.
Was surprised he was still in bounds, But he tried to do something.
It was a really... I think I said, oh, that's a bad angle, and it goes off.
And then everyone was like, oh.
Okay, so what I'm about to say, people might be saying, I'm taking a bad angle at this, but I just want to lay it out. After going home, sleeping on it, waking up, I woke up with several realizations. One, the Miami Heat are not a good basketball team. Can we all agree on that? The Miami Heat are not a good basketball team.
I think the question is, do you think they're better than the Bulls?
They're clearly not. The Bulls beat them 3 times.
I said, they're
3-0 against
Jimmy Butler not being there. The fear factor is gone from the Miami Heat. They're not a good team, right?
Yeah,
Marshall?
They have some good players, but they're not. No, they're not the same.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay, so knowing that, it got me to thinking, okay, yeah, the Bulls have won a lot of games lately. 13 of their last 18 games have been dubs. That's a good thing. If we go back to March, in which Coby White really established himself by becoming the player of the month in the Eastern Conference, there were 20 games, right, since then. In those 20 games, they are 13-7. So I was like, well, how many of those were good wins over good teams? Well, let's take a look at the wins they had over teams with losing records or just 500. Orlando has a 500 team. Man, it's not pretty. They were 9-2 against teams that did not have winning records. Their losses were to Phoenix, in which Kevin Durant and them did what they do, and to Dallas, and that was a one-point loss not too long ago. Their games against teams with winning records, there were 9 of them. They are 4-5 against winning teams. Twice they beat the Lakers. We remember that. Their best win of the season from a signature win standpoint. They went to Los Angeles and absolutely just beat them down. And then, of course, Josh Giddey needed a half-court shot to get the second win. They beat Denver, but Denver didn't have Nikola Jokic or Aaron Gordon in that win.
It's not real.
And then they beat Indiana for the final of those wins against teams with winning records. There was no Tyrese Halliburton.
That's the part of it that's hard to figure out. Like, you're happy for the Bulls to win the games that they've won because they still had to do that. But there are a lot of teams right now, especially in the Western Conference, who are resting players, similar to what even we saw with Cleveland, even though they're in the East, what we saw earlier in the week, because they are trying to make a playoff run. Like, they are giving their guys some rest that March. So how do you try to quantify what you're seeing out of this team?
So I'm looking at this team right now, and I'm like, well, what exactly is this team? Because, yes, we all want to get caught up in better basketball being played. Everyone will agree. The Bulls are playing better basketball in the second half post-trade deadline, specifically because of the accolades of Kobe White and of Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey nearly averaging a triple-double since the trade deadline. Kobe White, he's been on one, to say the least, where he's been one of the highest scoring players in the league. And, of course, a young and developing Modest Bouzelis. And if you look at those three players, you're thinking, okay, well, they can be three of this combination of players that Arturis Karnišovas kind of talked about at the trade deadline of, hey, we don't need these superstars necessarily in short order. We can build a championship contender in a different way. Listen back to what AK said about more than one way to build a championship team.
I think in terms of moving forward, I think there's different structures that you can, you know, try to get to a championship. There's a 2-3, you know, star players and then a lot of role players, or you can build it as a 9-10 very good players. And I think now we leaning towards to have a lot of solid good players and 9-10 that can last through the season, because, you know, there's going to be injuries, and, you know, I think more and more teams are doing that.
Okay, so that was Arturis Karnišovas in February at the trade deadline, his post-trade deadline press conference, in which he did not move Nikola Vucevic and brought in a lot of talent that has helped the Bulls do what they're doing. We were talking about Trey Jones, Zach Collins, and I know Trey Jones is hurt, but also Kevin Huerter. My issue here is when you talk about the 9-10 players there, I think everyone's looking at Kobe White, Modest Bouzelis, and of course a re-signed Josh Giddey as being parts of those pieces. Here's why I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because if you start signing players like that and they continue to get better and better, you can now use those guys as trade chips when it is time to go out and get an actual superstar, or you can add to them, however you want to do it, and you now have future draft allocation that you can also send the other way to get whatever it is you need. My issue, though, is I don't know that I trust AK to get that job done, and it's a lot like what I saw last year with the Bears, right? When they were 4-2, and I was like, I know one thing about the Bears. They can beat bad teams. That's where I am with this Bulls team. I know they can beat bad teams, but every time they play a team like the Cavaliers and some of these other world beaters, the OKC game is a great example. You see just how far away they are from threatening anything close to being a championship contender. So the question becomes, are we okay with that? And are we good with AK being the person that leads them on this next charge? Because he's been given the keys, or at least allowed to hold on to the keys, much like Ryan Poles has with the Bears.
I think he waited way too long to do what he's attempting to do now. We all know that. Maybe 2 years too long. I mean, I'll just say for the sake of it, maybe a year and a half too long he waited to make any sort of bold moves, and admit, because he finally did do that, admit that they needed to do things differently. Here's my issue, Layla. My issue is to building around those guys, as you said, if that's what they are doing, and Modest Bouzelis, Giddey, and Kobe White. I don't know if any of those guys is who we think they might be at their best. Like, we don't know. But that shot he hit last night, the killer instinct, I think he's going to be good. Josh Giddey, he's been, like you said, he's been doing it since the All-Star break. He's in a contract year. Is he really a triple-double machine? Is he really that good? And then we talked about Coby White. He was gone for three quarters last night. I think that's the essence of him. He got hot since the All-Star break. He's averaging, what, 20 points a game? So it took him a while to get to that average. That shows you like the volume was low early in the season. So I don't know if I trust those guys as the core of the Bulls.
I think that from a front office standpoint, your mission statement lies in who you think your stars are. And there was no doubt when he was in Denver, Arturas Karnišovas, that your mission statement lied in your evaluation of drafting a second-round pick of Nikola Jokic. Then you built around him because you had a defined star, arguably the biggest one in the past 5 years, 10 years of the league, you know, based on the way he's played. Maybe not 10, probably 7. But perennial MVP candidate, to say the very least. You do not have that mission statement-defining player here. Yeah. You have a developmental pick in Modest Buzelis, wonderfully developing. You have Josh Giddey, who you took. I don't think it's the same as, say, akin to James Harden going to the Rockets from Oklahoma City. So you're still trying to figure out who your mission statement star is. And until that person exists on this team, then we don't know what the clear direction is. So I understand him evaluating who is in front of him and saying that 9 to 10 players and complimenting the efforts of his team. But we still just don't have the defined message and the defined direction yet.
Yeah, unfortunate.
This is the Midday Show on the Score. Mark Grody joining us on this Thursday, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi. We talk Cubs next, an unlikely performance out of somebody who has been consistent. Not necessarily a reason to panic, but maybe a reason to illustrate the starting pitching situation for the Cubs right now. That's next on The Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
The next pitch is hit high and deep to left center field. Crow Armstrong goes back. He looks up, and this one is gone. Jonah Heim with a two-run shot to left center. And the Rangers back on top. Now up 3-1 over the Cubs here in the
fifth. Seems to have stretches where he's making great plays every single day. And here's a fly ball to right. This is going to end the ball game as Garcia makes the catch. And the Rangers win the series finale by a score of 6-2.
That is Pat Ron, Zach Zaidman on the call on The Score. And yes, the Cubs take 2 of 3 from the Rangers, but they don't get the sweep even on a Shota Imanaga day, a 6-2 final. During a game where we were trying to figure out if the weather was going to threaten or not, but it held off enough for them to get the game in. And the long ball did unfortunately do in the Cubs during this game. You heard one of them from Jonah Heim. Corey Seager adds two more in this game. And that was negating the Cubs' best efforts. They managed only 4 hits in the game. Seiya Suzuki with 2 of them. He adds a triple in the 4th inning, but unfortunately just not enough because the Rangers outpowered the Cubs, which is something we've seen before. Shota goes 5 innings, gives up 5 earned runs, 7 hits, strikes out 4 batters, only walks 1, but when the ball spends a little too much time in the strike zone, that might happen.
Jonah Heim's been a problem in this series, by the way. I've been hearing his name way too much throughout this. I think it's pretty simple, honestly, what happened with Shota Imanaga yesterday, and he went through this last year, too. He's given up a lot of fly balls, and he's gotten away with fly balls in some of his other starts, and this was the day, very simply, he didn't get away with it. He did not get away with it today, yesterday. So it's something that you can, I mean, it's been in my head, like the fly balls that he's giving up this season, and it finally came home on him yesterday. And he's been so good. I mean, he's been so good early in the season last year, so good this year, but he just didn't get away with it yesterday.
He gave me all the feels of a guy who was about to get hit around from jump, because Marcus Semien, on the first batter of the game, hits one. I was like, oh, that's a loud out. And I was like, that seems like he might want to settle down. Oh, next batter, what? Home run, Corey Seager. And at that point, I was like, oh, the Cubs are going to need about 6 or 7 runs to win this game. And Imanaga really never got into any kind of a rhythm, per se. He had a couple of innings where he was like, okay, he might have stemmed the tide a little bit. But in the fifth, it all falls apart. And I think for him, it's just kind of a,
I came in with an ERA under one. Now my ERA has ballooned up to 2.70, but that's okay because it's early in the season, and every outing can't be a perfect outing. You're going to need more than two runs to win most games on any given day. And Imanaga's been a model of consistency. I believe that was his second worst start as a Cub in a season plus. So I don't think it's as big of a deal. I'm not going to harp on it because bottom line is they won the series, and that's the goal. Win your series at home, split on your road trips, and you'll be just fine.
Well, I do want to add that I think you and I had the same thought, Mark Grody, is that as it stands right now, with Justin Steele going to the 15-day injured list with the elbow concern, tendonitis, it's not ideal when you have Steele on the IL and then your stopper doesn't stop in Shota. Now, this is a small window into what's happened so far this year. And we knew Steele had struggled more than a typical performance for him. We wonder if, you know, this showed earlier on in the season. That would make his five home runs that he gave up make a little more sense. But after that, you're talking about Jameson Taillon, Matt Boyd, who is doing work. Like, he's putting together a very nice body of work. There's no doubt about that. And then we talked about some of the people who could fill in later in the rotation in Steele's absence. But you can't have your 1-2 struggle, whether it's one on the IL and one struggling the way he did yesterday, or trying to figure out how that goes moving forward. This could be a lingering issue.
Yeah, and we talked about it just yesterday with the Cubs scoring all the runs that they have been scoring, and obviously just two yesterday. But you don't want to get in a situation where the offense has that pressure on them where they have to score 6-plus runs every day to make this thing real. Another thing low-key that bothered me about the game yesterday, like the Shota thing, I'm over it. Like, he gets a pass, but it was what it was. He made some bad pitches yesterday. Nate Pearson, who obviously he was part of the breakdown and that the Arizona game where Arizona scored eight runs in that
day game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just making sure I got my games right here. But Nate Pearson comes in. I know the lights were off a little bit, but he gives up the homer to Seager. He gave up three hits over his one inning against San Diego, and then I mentioned it was at Arizona. So that's a really important person that they are relying on in the bullpen, and I know everything can change in the bullpen, but that, like, low-key bugged me about as much as anything in the game yesterday, that Pearson still is not on track.
Yeah, and I don't know how many times everybody's going to see time and the bullpen. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know how many times you want to throw him out there with a certain deficit, like a small deficit, and see what he's going to do. Do you try to give him some even lesser leverage innings than what we saw?
Well, I mean, that's kind of what they did yesterday. You know, like, here's a calm spot for you. And that's what scares me, is that even in that lesser spot, I guess, so to speak.
I still thought it was a winnable game at that point.
Okay. I mean, but it wasn't the usual spot that you would expect a Nate Pearson to come in.
I'm talking like you're up 10 to 2.
Yeah. Okay. You know? Yeah, I mean, that ideally.
I hate to be a jerk about it.
Ideally, that's what you want to do with bullpen guys that are struggling, but they did what they could do yesterday, and he still struggled.
I think, you know, when you think of what is the opposite of high leverage for a reliever, it's a game in which you're either up by a whole lot or down by a whole lot. In the sixth inning of a game, you're down 5-1. That seemed like a low leverage spot compared to what he could have been out there. And I thought they were just trying to give him a chance to kind of work things out. And, you know, he gives up three hits in over two innings. You mentioned the big home run by Seager, his second of the game.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying, Layla, especially because you want to see improvement from these bullpen pieces. The Cubs have been fortunate in that a lot of the games that they've won, they just haven't had high leverage situations in those games. But now, with what's on deck with this West Coast road trip,
you mean they haven't had low leverage situations?
No, I mean high leverage situations. And when you're winning games 7-1, go back to the Oakland series. Okay. There's just not like a lot of high leverage
differential.
And speaking of differential, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but the funny thing about all this is going back to how they look with a 9-6 record. They're only three games over 500, but they lead Major League Baseball and most teams by a wide margin with a plus 28 differential. I know you're going to say a lot of that is the Oakland series.
I'm not. No,
but I'm saying they've been very dominant in a lot of their wins. And it's the close ones which get you scared, and that's why they're only three games over 500. Not because they haven't been scoring runs. It's because when they're in a tight game, everybody's sitting on their hands.
And Jack White sitting in the front row at the Cubs game yesterday. I kept thinking to myself, it was he humming dun, 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 the whole time that he was sitting there.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a catchy riff. I loved the post from Scott Shagnon, our friend from Marquee, that get you somebody who looks at you the way Jack White looks at Kyle Tucker. Yeah, but that's also how I look at Kyle Tucker, which is why I think that every game is winnable, even when it's a 4-run deficit. You know, I feel like at that point, or even like anything that is somewhat surmountable, I'm like, yeah, they got that dude.
The Cubs need the Ricketts to look at Kyle Tucker in that same manner.
Yeah, no kidding.
Jack White's almost 50. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Black, jet black hair.
Rock stars are timeless.
They are.
As to how they look timeless, well, I'm not going to fault anybody for using smoke and mirrors. We have so much more coming
up next. More like heroin and cocaine.
On the Midday Show on the Score.
Not Jack
White. We've got some film study. Did we find a clue in a Bears YouTube video? And what about this Matt Vrabel speech to his team about team meetings? We look at it all next on the Score.